can do without after ball breakfast in the mornings.
Good morning, lads. How are you, Jeremy?
They're fun. They get on well.
You start the day with a good energy.
I love watching.
It's brilliant. Huge fan, yeah.
Listen to Off the Ball Breakfast live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Highly recommend it.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy,
proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome along to the Hurling Pod. It is the week of the All-Ireland Hurling Final. It is an All-Ireland Final without Limerick or Kilkenny for the first time since 2017. It's an All-Ireland Final without the Leinster and Munster champions for the first time since 2013. That was Clare against Cork. It's Clare against Cork again. It's an All-Ireland Final with two Munster teams for a third time in five seasons. And it brings back memories of those epic battles in 13 when Clare would eventually win the replay. Hat-trick from some young lad called Shane O'Donnell. Wonder where he went after that. And they won 5-16 to 3-16. That was also Clare's last time to win the All-Ireland Championship and the last time they were in the final. While Cork are back in the decider for the first time since 2021. And they're hoping to lift the Liam McCarthy for the first time since 2005. So they are the stats and the facts ahead of this weekend. Paul Murphy, James Skeller here. How are you getting on, lads?
What's going, lads?
Very good. How are you?
We mentioned Skell on the members pod last week. This is a novel pairing. And the reason that I kind of went through those was just to show how novel and how different this is. Obviously, tickets are absolute goldust. Murph stuck something into the group there yesterday, which I thought was a classic. I'm going to paraphrase it slightly, which is the idea that you had to go and take the antler off a stag somewhere in Kerry, bring it to Cork, and if you dropped it in a lake at the right time, it would bring you to Tiernanog, and you had to pay by cash if you're going to buy a ticket. That's how difficult tickets are to get for this girl.
Is that actually the case? Because you know sometimes with matches they say tickets are like goldust, but is that actually the case?
I think so.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Yeah.
I've never had so many requests where, like, even last year for the Limerick against Kilkenny game, a limited amount of tickets came on sale the week of the game. And I think if you knew someone in another county who was in a club that could get you a ticket, particularly if you could source them a ticket maybe for the football final, they tend to kind of move around pretty quickly. This time round, though, because these teams are starved for success,
sure.
they're mad keen to go.
That's because, as it was well known, Kilkenny people don't travel.
Oh, look.
And Limerick had three in a row at the time, so you know what I'm saying.
Man firing shots from the last round of the round robin there.
Well, I was told during the week by a good friend of mine that Murphy is three or four up on you in the last couple of weeks. You need to get him back with a couple.
What have I actually done the last few weeks now that was?
Oh, I haven't forgotten about the Muppet. I haven't forgotten about that.
I withdrew that statement. That's now doesn't exist anymore. It was stricken from the record.
Gone. You can't go into the air or into the and just withdraw it. Okay.
Okay.
It's still out.
That's true. Okay, that's true. That's fair. But that's only one. You said four. Okay.
But I can't force it. I have to find the right time.
I think there are a few things more important or less important than coleslaw and a chicken fillet roll. So I think Muppet should be allowed to stand. But anyway, that would be my judgment on this so far.
it's a very grand word really to use. Like, there's far worse insults there now. As well, you know, you're a man well versed in the swear words. Muppet.
using them.
Now, I did throw an old folk into it, so maybe that leaned into it a small bit more. But anyway.
Well, Paul Murphy, defend your folk here, because this was similar with Kerry football, where they were like massively outdone by the Armagh support that were there on Saturday just gone at the All-Ireland football semi-final, where, you know, even the Kerry manager Jack O'Connor was saying afterwards that the lack of support hurt them, that like when Armagh needed energy at times, the fans were there. What's the reason for this Kilkenny support issue, or is it even an issue? And was it the same when you were playing?
Was it the same? It probably wasn't the same. Like, I mean, when I started playing, there was, you know, four matches in the championship and you had an All-Ireland. So you had that shorter run. With the round robin now, with more games, that definitely does feed into it, I think, across the board for every county. You know, particularly with the round robin phase, not necessarily for the latter stages with the semi-finals or so on. But there has to be an element of the success over the years as well, where people, you know, traditionally used to go to loads of games and then slowly, you know, maybe once Kilkenny weren't competing in All-Irelands. Now there's a cohort there, and you have to always say that there's a cohort of people that are always going to the games and will always go to the games regardless how Kilkenny are going. But, you know, what was interesting was actually when we were down in Dolans in Limerick, you know, someone observed to me that he said, geez, there's people following this Limerick team that didn't follow him years ago, you know, and it was an observation. And I just kind of said, well, you know, that goes with the territory of you're winning, you have the bandwagon up and going and people will come with you. And I suppose then you probably get a fair reflection of who travels when you're maybe not competing as much for All Ireland. That's probably the same at every county. But if you look at Offaly, Will, I mean, you know, the sellout, the demand for tickets for the under 20 final was unbelievable, you know. And a few weeks later, we had the minor final. We didn't see a similar demand, but similar enough with Tipperary also. It was Kilkenny and Tipperary. Nolan Park wasn't sold out, you know. So there must be an element of the success there over the previous years. But it's hard to explain. I mean, it's been a topic that's been brought up a lot. But it's hard to say there's any one definite reason as to why the attendances aren't through the roof.
Does that answer it enough for you, Skell, before we dig into this week's game?
Hey, I was just checking the population there, Kilkenny, in the last census. There's 104,160 people in the county. So surely be to God, you can muster up 20 or 25.
What is that? That's a fifth the size of Cork. It's half the size of Limerick. I'm not pointing to it either. Like, I'm not saying that, you know, we should be filling Crow Park or anything like that, but it is 100,000 people. Oh, sorry.
I'm only messing, man. I'm only putting your wire that AC on.
No, but do you know the way? Like, I think I have seen that pointed out before. It's like 100,000 in terms of people defending it. I've said 100,000, and someone has to go, ah, that's not a reason. It is kind of a reason as well. Like, I mean, Cork, 500,000 people at the moment. The demand is huge for tickets down there. Try and go down and get a ticket in Cork. I'm not saying Clare either, but, you know, 500,000 people, fair margin of people will want to go and watch the hurling, even if they're more football supporters.
Yeah, I'd agree. Look, this is the Hurling Pod, by the way, with thanks to Borgosh Energy, proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. It is the week of the final, and there's so many different things to talk about going into this, but I'm, like I said at the tail end of the Members Pod last week, I'm kind of excited that this isn't a Limerick or Kilkenny final, and that we can look at the echoes of 2013 and look at two different teams coming to this decider, because the other thing as well is, Skell, I don't know if it'll find the heights of the game that we already saw back in the Munster Championship, but back in the park that time, 3:26 to 3:24, that win for Clare against Cork. That was a stunning game. There was loads of mistakes, there was loads of scores, there was loads of shooting. Is there a possibility we see something similar like that and get an absolute classic of an All-Ireland final next Sunday?
Well, as a neutral, I certainly hope so. I think probably partially the reason that the Clare-Cork game kind of got overshadowed somewhat is what happened between Limerick and Cork again. because, you know, Limerick being so strong and Cork overtaking them, I don't think many expected that. And then when you look at the semi-finals over last weekend, they produced one epic encounter and one that kind of probably flattered to deceive a small bit. So I'm hopeful we get the same kind of excitement, you know, and execution that we saw in the Limerick and Cork game, solely because they just went at it. You know, tactics were obviously prevalent in the game. There was tactics on both sides, but it's just you just got the sense that both 15s just went, you know, went hammer and tongs, nearly like hurling of old to a degree, and the tactics kind of took a second seat. So I'd hope that Clare and Cork come in the same kind of manner and tone, which it looks like they will, because I wouldn't call either team an overly tactical team. You know, they play to their strengths, and the strength is moving the ball quick into inside forwards to do damage. You know, that's really it. And it's a hard place to be in the middle third when you're playing both those teams. So I think from our perspective, we're only hoping that we get the same kind of excitement and clutching at it. But the two teams are in the final, you know, they have absolutely the potential to serve up such excitement. So again, fingers crossed.
Murph, what are you expecting there? Kind of wider picture as a game, what do you expect?
Look, it's going to be really interesting. It's obviously a fresh final to look forward to. Two essentially new teams coming into it. Like, Cork had the focus of Limerick the last day to focus their mind on what they need to do in the semi-final. Cork will love to hit those heights again in terms of their performance. But that's going to be offset by a Clare team that, like, they've just been quite fearless throughout the year. They haven't been flawless, but they've been fearless certainly when they've been playing. They've shown great creativity, and they've shown an ability to cause problems for teams, identify where the issues are and cause problems for them. It's such a tough one to call, because when we're looking at Limerick at one side, we're looking at how does one team go and take on Limerick. But with this, we have two different teams, essentially, like, as in two different styles of teams going against each other. And where they're going to try and assert their dominance is going to be really interesting. Again, it's going to come back to, I think, the likes of Shane O'Donnell. Where will they position him from the start? You know, against Wexford, Shane O'Donnell started out in the centre forward position. It looked like a great setup for the start of the game, got out in a lot of ball, and then they pushed him back in full forward. Something similar against Kilkenny, but didn't really get as much traction out centre forward. Huge traction then when he goes in full forward. I think Clare are going to go, listen, you know, we're going to play Shane close to the goal here now. And then the restructure around the field after that. Like, the big question is going to be, is Taylor going to start? That's going to be another thing. Or do they bring him in like they did? And I'm probably preempting the conversation we're going to get onto anyway. But that's another big question. And where that could be either a tough, it's a great proposition for Clare to have. Cork preparing for that, you know, they're going to have to kind of think, okay, well, are we going to prepare not solely for Ryan Taylor from the start, but he brought so many players into the game the last time. Certainly like a Shane Kingston down the other end, when they're introduced, they have a big impact. So let's say if either of those boys are coming off the bench, both teams respectively are going to say, right, well, this player has an impact. We need to keep tabs on him. We need to have a plan. So I think there's a lot of sideshows here. Their defences haven't been flawless either at times this year. There's been goals, which I think for us as neutrals can only be a positive thing in that there's been great defending from both sets of defenders, but teams have been able to go at them in the defence as well. So there's been great scoring. I just think, look, you're nearly afraid to big these games up too much because you can nearly be disappointed afterwards. But there's a lot here to take apart that just points towards that this is going to be a great game.
All right, Scal, you may as well get straight into it. Is this too much of a risk to go Ryan Taylor from the start? Or do you consider what he did in the second half and the transformation he has, not just on the game, but on the players around him during the game in the semi-final as well? Like, it would be a massive ask him to start, wouldn't it, given he spent a year in the sidelines? Again, I don't know how sharp he's been in training. Lohan was talking about the fact that he was flying going into that semi-final, but you bring him in when you need him versus, is it a big ask with only a half of hurling in his legs competitively, which happened a couple of weeks ago, to bring him in from the start, even if you think maybe he could replicate what he did against Kilkenny?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, one for debate, but I think there's two ways of looking at it. One is from the side of the player, and two is from the side of the team. And I think the player, if you ask him, wants to play every minute, but ultimately the team has got to the final, you know, the semi-final at least, and thus far without him. And they've performed admirably without him. Yes, as Murph said, they've had some patches whereby their performance hasn't been crystal clean, but ultimately across the whole championship, they've been very, very, I suppose, you know, consistent in terms of how they approach the game, personnel they bring in throughout the game. And what Ryan Taylor gave them in the semi-final was a bit of an energy boost at the right time, I think. At the right time when let's say, at the same time, Kilkenny were bringing in substitutes that didn't have the same impact as Ryan Taylor. And in today's game, and we see in the football today, if you have substitutes who can come in, make a positive difference in energy and keep the thing flowing, you know, you don't miss a beat, it's a huge, huge step in the right direction. So I think when Lohan and his management team look at Clare, they'll say, we've performed really well. We've done really well. We get to the last, you know, 20 minutes. If the game is on the line, introduce Ryan Taylor. That's why we said about Shane Kingston. Like, Shane Kingston was a victim of his own substitute success, the impact he was having at times, whereby I said before, he was like the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer of United, whereby he was so good coming off, impactful, you know, to his team coming off the bench that he couldn't start him. Because I think going back a few years ago, Shane Kingston, for example, played unreal. I think he got 5 points in a semi-final. I can't remember against who that was in 21.
Kilkenny, then he started. Six. He got 6 points.
He came on, got 6 points, started the final at that time after and had a really kind of downer performance for his own standards. And then, let's say, since then, he's been kind of introduced as a sub. So when I look at Ryan Taylor, I'm not quite putting him in that category just yet because he's always been a starter for Clare. But where he's situated right now is he's coming in a position of energy. And that's vital in Ireland finals. You know yourself, Murph. You're hotly contested battles. Everyone's going hammer and tongs. It's fully on the line, so there's no shadow boxing. It's straight from the off. So if you get someone who has... Ryan Taylor's experience is huge, energy and kind of wherewithal in the middle of a game, it's massive. So I can see him starting. Look, I wouldn't be surprised, but ultimately where he's at physically, I presumably, and how much he's missed, I'd say he's going to come in the last 20-25 and add a bit of a boost, just like Cork will do with Kingston, Ethan Toomey, etc. So I think the squads on both teams have, you know, they've really facilitated the team's success. You know, it hasn't been like a 17 or 18 man effort. It truly has been 20-22 man effort for both squads. And they're finishing strong. The peak games aren't petering out. So they're starting strong, as we've seen with Cork, you know, against Limerick even last week, starting really strong, but finishing out strong as well. So I think there's two good squads where they've good balance. And when you have people like Kingston Taylor to come in, you know, it just keeps the train moving in the right direction, which we're 20 to go.
That is a good point on the panels, which we'll come back to in a second. But on the Taylor point, Murph, do you see something similar here, which is Clare will wait maybe until the need is most within a game and then you bring him in to add those extra few percent off the bench?
Yeah, absolutely. We mentioned it about Tony Kelly when Tony Kelly was returning with Clare, that like we were just saying that it's you don't just come back in and just turn it back on. It's a very hard thing to do. And I remember, like, for years, if we had a player, let's say Richie Power, for example, there was a few years there where Richie Power had injuries, but he was capable of giving you, like, you know, at a certain time of year, maybe half an hour, he was carrying an injury, and maybe the following time he'd be able to play the full game, but this week it's half an hour. And you'd have stages where, let's say in training, maybe last week, you know, Clare might have done three sets of 10 minutes of playing a game where you do 10 minutes, really intense, really good, bring the players in, talk to them, send them back out and so on. Like, I don't know what stage Ryan Taylor was at, like at what stage he really came back, but he's still kind of mended himself. Like, you know, it's not just a case, he's 100% yes, but match fitness where he can go 70 minutes is a different story from being back fully fit. And I would be saying that he probably has been doing two sets of 10 minutes and then leaving off the last 10 because you're going, well, look, realistically, what they want him for this year is coming off the bench and doing what he does best, but he can only really do it for probably half an hour at the moment. I could be wrong. I hold my hands up. I could be completely wrong. But if you look at Shane O'Donnell, Peter Duggan, Dave Fitzgerald, and all these lads, like they've been conditioned since you know the league. Well, I'd say except Shane O'Donnell, but they've been conditioned since then, and that does count coming to this stage of the year. So realistically, I just think, you know, Clare go with the six forwards that started last game. That's the six forwards that start this game. And another point, and Skettle, you basically touched on it as well, was that it's about doing a 70-minute performance here and having lads come in off the bench and sustaining that performance past the 70 minutes. That's what's going to be important here. And it's like Usain Bolt doing a sprint. He doesn't sprint and slow down coming up to the line. He sprints straight through the line. So what they're going to want to do is go as hard as they can. When they see an Aidan McCarthy start to slow down a small bit or whatever, take him off. There's your Ryan Taylor going on, you know, Aaron Shanahan, whoever it's going to be, and you're sustaining that level. And similarly, Cork are doing the same thing down the other end. So it's a case of, to win in All-Ireland, it's not 15 players that are really good. It's your 20, 22, you know, players pushing really, really hard and the lads behind them.
You've preempted that one for Skell. The other selection call probably the Clare have to make, I think it's just the McCarthy versus Shanahan debate. And we were all very impressed by how Aaron Shanahan had played in the quarterfinal against Wexford. But then McCarthy comes back into the team the last day, led their scoring. I'm thinking he starts on Sunday.
There's no reason why he doesn't start. I know I sat here last week and or the week previous and said that I would be going with Shanahan again because of his positive impact and then have McCarthy to finish. But we've questioned teams like Clare, like Wexford, like Waterford in the past about their free-checking and how important it is to have a really efficient 100% striker. And again, look at did he get 9 out of 9 last week? Something like that. Like he's figure, but basically he's 100%. And in a game of tight margins, you know, when you're meeting the best, it's critical, absolutely critical that you're knocking over your frees because it's so hard to get them in the first place. Because whether we like it or not, right, when the championship progresses on to latter stages, semi-finals and finals, referees do let a bit more go. They let it off because it's the national event. It's highly viewed on television, etc. And they want to get a free-flowing game. It just happens. So that's fine. Mm. So frees in these games are hard to come by. And they'll often be in difficult positions on the pitch under, you know, difficult conditions, etc. So I think McCarthy, for me, has to start. Just a continuation of the same. And then again, like that, Shanahan is a great guy to bring in. You know, I've good time for that man. Again, physically, very, very, you know, very, very strong, good in the air, can move swiftly for a big man, two-sided, can set up, etc. So he's a great kind of person to bring into an area whereby you put him at 14, put him at 11. He's good moving onto the ball at 15. However, that's for me at the moment, looking at what Lauren's doing, that's 20 minutes. Again, similar kind of style to what we're saying about the other guys, 20 minutes. Whereas McCarthy, you're saying free check and knock over your freeze. And if you do that, that's a lot of the job done for McCarthy. I wouldn't expect too much off him from open play. You know, I know standards are high here. Like if he knocks a point or two from open play, fabulous. But if he hits 100% out in his frees, that's a great day's work for that man. So let's go McCarthy start and Shanahan to come on at some stage.
All right. Murph, I'm not casting any aspersions on Johnny Murphy at all about the idea that you might ref it differently, but I'm just wondering, did you find that in any of the All-Ireland finals that you were playing in where you felt it genuinely was refed a little bit differently on the big day compared to the previous rounds?
I never compared it to in the previous rounds. I never thought it before. Like let's say the games that preceded it, that the referees were different. There definitely was calls that you were there going, not to say is that because of the big day, but it's such a big call.
You were getting away with a bit more in an All-Ireland final that you mightn't have got away with before then.
Not necessarily, no. Like, I mean, I go back, I think of Johnny Cohen's tackle. We mentioned it previously on Colin Fenley, like the chokeslam he basically did on Colin Fenley in 2015.
I remember a game where he started off against Tipperary, and it's beaten me to think of the year. But yourself and Turtle and a few lads, he upended a couple of Tipperary lads a few times.
No, that was the semi-final in 2012. We didn't upend lads. That was
No. I'm up another bit now.
There was a row at the start of the 2012 semi-final, and Taggy got a point straight away. And as the ball was going in over the bar, the backs were fighting with the forwards on the far end. And myself, Jackie and Tommy, I think, were in shouldering a few lads, like, you know, Noel McGrath and Owen Kelly or whoever. Yeah, shoulder. And then I went out to the middle of the field and JJ was swiping at John O'Brien or something like this. I do remember the clip of that one. But that was two ways. It was a two-way street.
Was it you or Terrell that up into Shane McKinnon, like, helicopter?
That was Jackie. That was Jackie in 2009, I think it was. I think it was 2009. But that was one Jackie has mentioned since, that it was like one he wasn't proud of. You know, it was just a case that people mentioned and said that was Jackie's style of tackling. But he was like, he just came through the crowd and Callan came through the crowd and he hit him a shot. And it wasn't a case that he was trying to avoid him or actually hit him. He was there. And once he saw that he was going to hit Callan, I think he just kind of, he firmed up a small bit and knew he was going to hit him.
Is what he said.
yeah. But no, in terms of decisions in finals, like, I always remember, like, looking back and the one, let's say, where Brian Hogan was going through in Paddy Maher in 2014, where Bubbles got the free subsequently off it. Like, that was given as charging, where it was really kind of a one where Paddy Maher was standing his ground, Brian Hogan was running through the middle, they collided, and you look at it and go, Jesus, would you have given that 10 minutes in? I think it was Barry Kelly. There are decisions that you kind of just wonder, not that they would have been given earlier on, but they're big decisions to be making. And again, I go back, like, you know, Johnny Cohen's one against Colin. Like, again, I mean, it was what it was, like, but you're wondering, the big day, like, I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about free takers here, you know, and the influence and getting into the game with players. Referees are trying to get into the game as well. But I think if any referee is looking at how to get involved in the game, it's Thomas Walsh the last day against Cork and Limerick. Like, that was a sellout, high pressure game. And I think, you know, unanimously, you'll always have a few people who say that he had a bad game. I think unanimously people are saying he had a great game. I think he did. I think he did really good and contributed. So I think if there's a template for how a referee gets involved in a game, like, look, the last we saw of Johnny Murphy was sending off Rory O'Connor. And it was the part of where he books Rory O'Connor after 5 seconds, but the players were meant to be back behind the 45, which they weren't. The official should have enforced that. Rory O'Connor should really have never been there. There's a few things like that you have to look at and go, okay, well, here's an opportunity for Johnny Murphy to have a really good game. And I hope he does. I hope he's a brilliant game. But in terms of decisions, I think it's something the referee does have to think about before the game. Say, look, this is going to be high pressure. There's going to be a lot of waiting around. There's going to be a lot of intensity. Both teams are going to really fairly try and get into the game, hit hard and lay down a marker. And I think that does have to be taken into consideration. And I know there's people out there who will say, oh, look, the letter of the law is this. If you want a good game, you have to take into consideration every player means well. Every player, no player is going out to get sent off. And every player is going to try and get stuck in. Of course, if there's a high head tackle, that's fucking reckless. Okay, yeah. But outside of that, I'd be saying keep the yellow cards, keep them handy for the first 10 minutes unless they're really needed. But let players get into the game and you'll find the game will balance out then and it'll be fine. Do you know?
It'll kick into gear, yeah.
It will, yeah. Mm. Yeah, it'll flow after that.
I can imagine it's a very intensive situation for the referee, especially being your first, you know.
And should they want to do well as well, like, you know.
Yeah, your first in Anthem, like, is nerve-wracking. So you can imagine, like, you know, 80,000 and Murph, stop laughing, right? I know exactly where your mind went. I know exactly where your mind went. Get your mind out of the gutter, okay?
We have youthful listeners, so we can kind of just casually move
get
on.
Get your mind
there,
out of the gutter. Your mother, I know exactly where your head went. And Will, you too. I just said it. I went, oh, shit.
Your first time in anything, nervous.
It was the fact you said anything was the way as well. I thought you were going to stop and go. If it's your first time, maybe you'd be nervous and we move on. But it's the way you went in anything.
Sport related.
Right, Johnny Murphy.
First time playing for the county. First time refereeing a final. You know, first time taking a free in a final.
Getcha.
Whatever it is, right? That's what I meant, okay? Oh, Jesus, Murphy. Where the hell was I? I don't even know where I was.
No, in fairness, I'll get you back. It was you were just saying that the referee's, like, you know, this is his first All-Ireland final. Like, you know, he wants to get involved and he wants to be.
If it's a clear and obvious situation, obviously you blow a free. Would you let... Let the game pan out itself. The first 10 minutes is critical because what will happen is the crowd are there for a spectacle too. Yes, they're supporting their own teams, but they're there for a spectacle. Yeah. They want a good game as well. And if they come out on top after a good game, all the better. So if you start calling some contentious frees in the first 5 or 6 minutes, they're going to get on your case and get on fast. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, and it's probably, as I said, it's the most publicized game of the year. Take your time, let it roll, and it'll find its way. And I think most finals have been that way. I don't, like, you might correct me. I don't remember a final in recent memory whereby you say to her, a referee, you were just a bit whistle happy there. I think in fairness, in the last number of years, it's been let ran. Am I right? Mm. I don't remember.
I can't remember anything mad in the last few years, no.
Yeah.
I don't remember any cribbing about decisions since the 2019 final.
Yeah, let's hope, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Had a clean 5 years of it in the period since. For Cork, Skell, I don't think they make any changes in the semi-final. I think now, with Downey not, what was he, ill, I think, for the quarter-final, he's back, takes his place at six. I think this is now a settled Cork team at this stage. And like Brian Hayes' performance in the semi-final guarantees he's been the guy that's got them to this final. I think he 100% starts. I don't see any other reason for Cork to make a change. Can you see any changes potentially?
No, I don't. And I suppose the best we've seen Cork play, to be fair, that's, has been against Limerick, where they adopted a certain tactic. So they didn't want to engage the Limerick half-back line. And what they wanted to do was get the Limerick half-back line going back towards the goal from puck-outs, etc. So on set plays, dead ball plays, should I say, the ball was pumped along a lot of the time. A sharp ball was kind of ruled out. But in open play, it was kind of, you know, finding space, etc. So I'm thinking, when we saw them against Offaly and Dublin, they weren't at their peak, obviously. So the Limerick team have brought out the best in Cork. So I'm hopeful they play the same kind of way against Clare, which is very intriguing for me, to be honest, because what the Cork half forward do so well is they move into pockets of space, they move laterally really well, they pick up spaces on dead balls and even open play from their half-back line midfield up, and they get Harnedy on the ball in spaces that you wouldn't normally associate. He can find himself anywhere from 10, 11, 12 across. Same with Barrett. Dalton predominantly, you could say, stays on the 10 side mostly, although he found himself last week on the 12 side only because it opened up for him, which I thought was very clever. So he brought himself into spaces that would have warranted, well, Kyle Hayes, do I go, do I stay? And he started shooting. So I'm very interested to see how the Clare half-back line, the likes of Ryan McInerney, Conlon, react to the Cork half forward line, and specifically how they set up on the Cork book out, because we see the only word I could use that is pandemonium. And the ball went down long, down top of someone like Brian Hayes, or even Conley can contest it too, and you had the Cork forwards coming at real pace. And it wasn't coming, they weren't coming in a way that was just pure off the cuff. It felt structured, because even Alan Connolly was wrapping his runs around the front, and then you had Harnedy and Barrett going straight through, so it looked like this was really, really set up. And, you know, it came to fruition as they got loads of opportunities off it. And it's the way they picked off space as well in open play by moving. I keep saying moving laterally. So they use 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. That zone, right, the pitch, they use it really well by moving laterally across. And they're found. And the key thing is forwards can do all the moving they like. Really, they can. They can move this way and that way. But if they're not found when things are under pressure, it's no good. But Cork, of late, particularly against Limerick, were finding them. You know, there's a great clip of when Hegarty takes a puck out, or sorry, a sideline to Hayes. Hayes shoots. Fitzgibbon shoots off into the 10 wing. Puck out is there. Punt. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's just heads up hurling. And it looks like the Cork have, you know, I have to say they've learned over the last couple of years how to play that type of game. They're finding pockets of space. They're not just doing it in a very overly structured manner. It feels to me that they're heads up players whereby they're given guidelines, you could say. This is me thinking out loud. They're given guidelines, mm-hmm. but it's mostly, see where the space is, go where the space is, and if you see it open, backs midfield, deliver it in there. And they're moving really, really well. So the challenge for Clare is how do you nullify the space but also tag your players? Because I've often said before, you can mark space, you can mark a player. It's very, very, very hard to do both in tandem. You need, in order for you to mark a player, you know what I mean, it involves having extra cover because space opens up. What happens if you stick tight to players? Players can move, space opens up, so what you need extra lads back, right? If you didn't mark the space, you need to be, again, more people back there because players find themselves in little pockets. So it's a very hard kind of balance to find. So that, for me, is the biggest challenge for Clare. I think their forwards, though, go more orthodox. Clare go more orthodox. So it's probably set up better for the Cork backs, but they'll have to get moving as well. You're going to ask a question there, yeah?
I was just going to say, before we move off the puckouts, because, again, this is your area of expertise, Clare did a really good job, as I recall, back in the game in the Munster Championship, disrupting it, and they turned over scores from it, and, you know, Cork maybe changed their puckout around a little bit after what happened in the Clare game. Can Clare do that again?
You might remember, Will, back then, right, Cork did a lot of mid-range puckouts.
They did.
So if you remember that, let's say, they didn't really, what's the word I'd use, unleash the long puckout until they played Limerick in the group game.
Yeah.
But in the Clare game, they used an awful lot of mid-range, right, where they were trying to find 10, 12 out on sidelines, nearly perfect precision ball, and they were getting cut out. I think it was 1-3 we counted that time, was it? That they got turned over. That was the one as well that O'Donnell got fouled. Do you remember that one where he got ran off the ball?
Yeah.
So that came from turnovers and puckouts. That has all stopped by the looks of it. And it's only hit. It seems to me that kind of puckout's only hit when it's absolutely clear and obvious. So if Dalton gets a puckout on the 10 wing or 12 wing, it's because he's in an ocean space. I don't see that kind of, you call it high risk. But in this instance, it's high risk and kind of low reward because where they're getting fruition is going long down top of the haze and moving forward. So I don't see that turnover coming. And even if it is turned over off long, you have time and space to kind of nullify that. where you get turned over in the middle and you're automatically at a numerical disadvantage straight away and you're in danger zone. So I think that's probably been ruled out because they're getting so much off the long. So I don't see that. I don't see it happening.
Hmm. Murph, how did they neutralise that Limerick half back line? Because Limerick do so much hurling out of that area, and particularly, like, we're talking about how good Kyle Hayes has been this year, and he did not get in as much ball in the semi-final as he normally would. And again, I'm sure this is a pattern that Cork would probably love to be able to do again, where you're making sure then that David McInerney or John Conlon aren't coming out and providing ball for the forwards at that stage as well. So what did Cork do to make it difficult for Limerick's half-backs last week?
Well, I suppose one of the things I noticed was that Limerick, or Cork identified, as we all know, I suppose, that Limerick, when they attack, they attack in numbers and they're well supported. Generally have two lads off the shoulder at any one time. It's almost like a triangle. You know, player gets a ball, pops it off, yeah, goes a big loop and run, and then maybe takes not even the next pass, it's the pass after that, takes that again on the run. And Cork obviously identified, which is not an easy thing to do, is that if we can manage to turn them over at some stage during that, there has to be players free somewhere around the pitch. Like, these players that are supporting off the shoulder are now not marking their man anymore. And one of the things that I could see straight away was that, first of all, Cork were really good at turning them over. They got some great turnovers off Limerick in their own half, as in Cork's half, in around their own 45, even getting in towards their 21. And as soon as that was happening, Cork players started showing for the ball all around the field. Like, there was space. They knew there was space. And, like, the best example is the Declan Dalton point of Aaron Gillan goes to get a goal, hooked by Kieran Joyce. They get the ball out, and Declan Dalton comes sprinting down. Like, he didn't start out over at that 65 where he receives the ball for the great point we saw. He was inside, in where the half forwards usually are, came running, knowing that eventually, you know, Niall O'Leary, whoever it's going to be, is going to get the head up and they're going to see that I'm in space now. And they came showing for it so well. And that was actually, it was the first time, yeah, that we saw the Limerick halfbacks actually go, where am I meant to be going here? What am I meant to be doing? Should I step up and expose the full back line, which is something we haven't seen done against Limerick in a long time. And they were forced to do that. For a while, they stayed off the half forwards and they started getting points. But then we saw the likes of Limerick move the ball around. Kyle Hayes got a ball in the second half for Dara Fitzgibbon's point. Kyle Hayes got a ball, I think he took a shot, and I think it was wide. And it was around the centre-back position, around Declan Hannan's area.
That's the sideline, Murphy, yeah.
Was that the one, yeah?
Hickory was sideline. He was at six. Hit it off his
that's
left.
That's it, yeah.
He shot,
yeah,
off the skin wing.
And if you look at that, when Kyle Hayes hits it, you know, he's after working really hard, obviously got the ball, took a shot, was going wide. As soon as that ball was going wide, Dara Fitzgibbon is gone, and he's gone running. And the thing is as well, the communication that Patrick Collins knows in the goal, right, get this ball back into play, who's going? And he pokes it into the similar space that Garrod Hegarty had against Clare down in Ennis when he got the goal. I think was it his goal, or he set up the goal. The one basically where he had loads of
shot
space.
Across goal, yeah.
Yeah, shot across goal. It was a similar situation that was inflicted then on Limerick, where Dara Fitzgibbon ran. And because Limerick had kind of committed players to supporting Kyle Hayes, there was now acres of space. And it was just, there were just things we haven't seen that teams were able to do to Limerick. Like, I knew teams probably knew that this is something we want to do, and if we can do it. But trying to get the game plan to be forced onto Limerick to actually achieve that was very tough. But they just created that space. And with that then as well, you know, we can talk about all the systems we want. Was it 6 points or 1-6? I'm trying to think they got off the long puckouts in the game against...
They got 6 out of 6 in the second half, Murph, wasn't it?
Wasn't that it? 6 long puckouts. I mean, absolutely incredible. Where it was like, okay, we're going to play this game where we're going to enforce it onto Limerick, that we're going to move around, all this great stuff. But then also, we're going to boom balls down, get up there, win those balls, and get scores. And they did. So although, like, parts of it is very technical and parts of it involves the whole team working together, they were also going, we're going to play right in your face as well. We're going to slap the ball down on top of you. We're going to go up and try and compete for it, and we're going to win the ball. And, like, I think that was even jarring for people to even see that, you know, physically the Cork forwards were bullying the Limerick backs, you know.
I have a question for you now in terms of what you did. They bullied the Limerick backs well because they went on 6-on-6, you know. It's rare we see teams nowadays with a 3-man full forward line, but Cork held it, you know what I mean? And yeah, I think people, pundits, have been saying, we've been saying anyway, you have to go man to man with Limerick,
yeah,
but they went the right way. If you're Clare now, so Clare pulled out a lad in the second half against Kilkenny last week, right?
Yeah,
and because, you know, Kilkenny, as we know, we discussed, were huge, I suppose, benefactor. You know, they're contributors to their own downfall in the way they played the ball long, right? But if you're Brian Lawan, do you say, right, from positions 2 to 9, stick up the rest, man to man, right? And let's pull a third man back or a fourth man back, to say, into your, a third man into midfield or a fourth man into your half back line, and see can Cork work it through us. That'd be very interesting. Then you're asking Tim O'Mahony and Rob Downey and Mark Corman to shoot under pressure. But you're going to have to go with a two-man for forward line and isolate them on one side with Clare, you know? I don't think you'd see 15 on 15 Clare versus Cork. Hopefully, I'd love to see it. But I'd say you'd see three full-back line Clare, four full-back line Clare, or three midfield, and then the rest up along. You know what I mean? Because they don't want Fitzgibbon getting in space, Joyce moving along. They don't want the lateral runs across the half-back line. So they're probably going to have definitely three, if not four people across there to cut it all out. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I mean, Clare will definitely go with the two-man full forward line anyway and bring out one player, whichever player that's going to be, they're definitely going to. But they are going to try and stem the influence of Darragh Fitzgibbon. You know, we can talk a lot about Hayes and Patrick Horgan and Declan Dalton and all these. But, like, I've been hugely impressed by Darragh Fitzgibbon all year in terms of he's constantly involved in the game. He's forever involved in the game. And he's getting scores as well. You know, he's chipping away.
He's hardly there at the moment.
And quietly, like, you know, as in he just gets through a lot of work. And he's kind of the fella that I nearly put it down as, while they're showing the replay of the last score, Darragh Fitzgibbon is getting through work at the time. Like, I mean, he's nearly on the ball replying for Cork at that time. Because I can think of so many scores where, particularly Limerick down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, Limerick got a score. And they're after getting maybe one or two scores. Next thing, Darragh Fitzgibbon goes up. And I think he got 4 or 5 points in that game. But before the game at the weekend, the semi-final, I was saying, like, you know, we can talk about all lads, but see if Darragh Fitzgibbon has an influence here today, it'll tell a lot. And he was just constantly involved. And I think Clare will identify that. I think Brian Lowen will say, look, there's an engine there. He's like a Jamie Barron, like a Bonner Maher. If you can stem him, you kind of stem a lot of the work that Cork are going to get through, you know? I do think they will crowd that up.
His engine at the moment is surreal.
It's incredible.
I think so. Like, we talk about that as an engine. And normally they die down after 60 minutes, you know, because it's incredibly hard. But his engine just keeps on ticking.
Yeah.
So, like, who you put on him? Because I was going to ask you, number one, who do Cork put on Tony Kelly? Because this is the type of game Tony Kelly could explode, you know. Yeah. But who do you put on Darragh Fitzgibbon? Do you say, right, Cahill Malone, just follow him all day?
You probably would,
lose a player, if you know what I mean? And I don't mean lose a player, but you know what I'm saying? No, sacrifice the guy to go after him all day.
Like, I think we played, when we played Waterford a few years ago, I think Conor Brown had to go on Jamie Barron because Jamie Barron was just that influential, but Conor Brown had the engine for him. But then in the second half, Waterford were like, well, we need to get Jamie Barron into the game. So they threw something else at us to kind of, play Jamie Barron into it. Fine, they did it really well. But I do think it's kind of a case, like, there's no player, I think, below sending them out there or sending out one or two players, say, listen, you're going to stick to this one. If you don't hold the ball, that's fine. You know, and there's certain players, and I include myself in that category, that you could have got that task in one of the days. I think if Cathal Malone was told, listen, you have to go out there and you have to stick to Darragh Fitzgibbon and, you know, go and hurl your own game, absolutely, but stick to him is the priority. I would never be insulted by that if I was Cathal Malone. I'd go, absolutely, here's my job. That's what I'm going to do and I'll get involved. And if I do my job really well, could be a platform for our team winning All-Ireland. And at the end of the day, for Clare, like, if you were told that, if Cathal Malone was told that, the priority is getting a Celtic Cross in your back pocket. That's it. So if you're told that, fine, I'll go and do it. And you trust that Brian Lowen, you know, and the management have thought this through. But I think you do. Yeah, I think you have to have someone that sticks to Darragh Fitzgibbon and just interfere with wherever he goes, get involved and just, you know, disrupt him during the whole day.
Do you want to answer your own question there, Skell? Where does Tony Kelly play then at the weekend?
Well, this is my logic now, Will, so please excuse me. I'm thinking, what am I going to get out of, from numbers 8 to 15, I kind of know what I'm going to get off their form this year. I know what Shane Donnan's going to do. Shane Donnan is going to win 3 or 4 frees. He's going to score probably 2 points, if not 3. Okay, Mark Rogers will score 2. David Fitzgerald could get 3 or 4, potentially. Do you know what I mean?
I love, by the way, how specific you are about this. Rogers, 2 points.
I'm trying to add up. So what I'm trying to do, right... Forgive me, I'm trying to get to 220 in my head, okay?
Okay.
Right, so I'm trying to say, where are they going to get 220 out of, okay? They're going to get 9 or 10 frees. So straight away now, I'm at like 17, 18 points. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
And then I'm saying, right, that's what you're going to get off every person. But that's their, I won't say it's their max. Do you know what I mean? But in terms of their game influence, that's what they produce. And their max might be a point or two extra. But Tony Kelly is different. His max could be, his ceiling could be so high that he could dominate areas of the pitch that, you know, yes, he might score 10 points, but he could get 4 or 5 points from play from you. He could create runs through the middle. He could work off the likes of Fitzgerald and Duggan, and he could create goals for you. So how to unlock Tony Kelly is the biggest question, I think, me personally, now, from an attacking perspective that Brian Nolan has, because you know what you're going to get out of the rest of them. The rest of them can win their ball. You know, they'll find open pockets of space. They'll get open shots, you know, and they get you a number scores. Very important. But Tony Kelly, right, if we need a goal, how are we going to unlock one? Well, it's through Shane O'Donnell or Tony Kelly, to be honest. So The question is, right, who follows Darragh Fitzgibbon? That's the question that can be answered. Colm Malone, I think, potentially has that. And Darragh Long could do it too, if you ask me. But Tony Kelly, where can you put him? I put him middle of the park. Me personally, put him middle of the park and say, right, Tony, just go have a day. Just go have a day and go have at it and work off and see what's in front of you, you know? So that's my logic, is sound that through. Where are you going to maximise Tony Kelly? Full forward lane? No. Half forward lane? I don't believe so. Midfield, where the ball we know is travelling a lot in this type of game. This type of game is not being carried a huge amount. It's being delivered quick, you know what I mean? So if it's delivered quick, it could break out in their backs. Tony Kelly's on it. Now we're moving. Do you know what I mean? It's different if you have a ball-carrying team. Do you know what I mean? It's hard to get Tony Kelly in the game at times because there's a lot of numbers. But if you don't, with the ball, Cork deliver an awful lot, quick. So that means it will break down. It will inevitably break down in the clear defence every now and then. They'll come out of it, and then Tony Kelly's on it. And sure, he'll shoot from 70, 80 yards, and like Crow Park could be his playpen. So, and I'd love to see it. Do you know what I mean? I'd love to see it because he had a quiet game now last week. Let's be fair. Yes, he got a couple of points in India. Absolutely, they were needed. But in terms of his standards, the peak we know he can reach, he was well marshalled for most of the game. Yeah. And even Clare people, you have to admit to me that now, yeah? He struck big points, but he was well marshalled. So his influence can be far grander.
Oh, definitely. I think as a perfect neutral here, you can define Tony Kelly's performance in that semi-final in two different ways. First 47 minutes, Murph pointed out, I think he had his first significant contribution 47 minutes into the game. Before that, he was quiet.
He held the first ball in the 47 minute.
Yeah. And then after that, he scores 3 points. So once it opens up for Clare and he gets that space, then he shows exactly what he can do. I wonder
his first possession, sorry.
Certainly his first meaningful possession was 47 in.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, what was the question? What
Cork? No, I was going to say it to Murph. Like, if you're Cork then, so Cork, like the beat of their own drum. They like to set the agenda themselves. And that was one of the beautiful things about the Limerick performance in the semi-final is that Cork won it in their terms and using their style. If you're going to respect a player like Tony Kelly, who you know can be so influential, and as Skell has just said, if he gets freedom, he can do serious damage, do Cork put someone to follow him?
Is Kieran Joyce going to follow him? This is the question for you, Mark.
Potentially, yeah.
In the midfield battle, you could have two sets of man-marking jobs in opposite sides.
You could, yeah.
You could have, like, potentially. May not happen, but potentially. You could have Fitzgibbon be marked one side and Kelly marked the other side with two.
Yeah.
Similarly, if you're Cork, you want to get Joyce on as much ball as you possibly can.
I respectfully disagree there now. Yes.
Okay, go on.
But again, not to cut across you, Murph, right? But Joyce comes across to me as the defender half of the midfielder pair. Again, Ken was a six. Started off as was he a four or two back in the day? You know, then spent a little bit of time at three, then came out to six, kind of found his way. Now he's out to eight or nine. And he feels like he's the fourth half back. So I'd say if there's a bit of a job to do there where someone has to be shut down, he's the man for it. But of course, I'm not saying he hasn't got the capability to go forward. I'm not saying that. However, I'm saying if you're picking someone between Joyce and Fitzgibbon to go man marking, I know who I'm picking.
Absolutely. No, you want Fitzgibbon in as much space as he possibly can for himself so he can make those runs that he's been doing all year. So then does it become Joyce versus Kelly then almost naturally, Murph, rather than even having to say, look, Joyce, you follow him everywhere he goes?
I don't know. Like my actual thought is that it'll be one of the wing lads. I actually think a strange one now, Mark Coleman, I think could actually follow him. The reason I say that is because Kieran Joyce is, from what I've seen of him, like I think what typifies his game was whether he got the hook or not on Aaron Gillan, I don't know, but he was back there. He's so good at identifying trouble and getting back that if you're doing a man-marking job, you have to stick with your man. You have to just stay there. And that can take you out of the game. So we're talking about someone sacrificing the game. Mark Coleman's a great hurler. He's an outstanding hurler. But you need an engine to follow Tony Kelly. And Mark Coleman has the engine. So does Kieran Joyce. But I would rather have Kieran Joyce have the freedom that, okay, I'm with David Fitzgerald at the moment, or McCall Malone. Actually, wait now, I can see something, and I'm going back and I'm supporting. And then when he supports and he gets the ball, he can then drive forward and not worry about Tony Kelly. Maybe even Tim O'Mahony. Like, you know, Tim O'Mahony does have the legs to cover him. And just say to Tim O'Mahony, okay, you've been a forward, you've been a back, you've been everywhere for us. Your job is now to stick to Tony Kelly. To be honest, I'd be proud as punch if I was going to Ireland final. And as a defender, someone is telling me, you're the man to mark Tony Kelly. I'd be like, absolutely brilliant. That's some compliment. Let's go and do it. So I actually think, from my point of view, I respectfully disagree. And I just think that I would like to have Kieran Joyce have a bit of a free license that, yeah, go and hurl midfield. But if you need to go back there and support backs and leave your man, go back and do that and let someone else step up there on Dave Fitzgerald or someone step up on Colin Malone. But you don't have to worry solely about Tony Kelly for the day. That's the kind of, I think that's the regard of whole Ciarán Joyson, that he just, he's such a kind of a leader there at that. And I agree with you, Skelly. He's like a fourth half back. I wouldn't even call him midfielder. He's a fourth half back. So that's, I don't think they're going to sacrifice Ciarán Joyce for that. Could be completely wrong. Could be looking at this Sunday going, Ciarán Joyce.
I was saying, like, where would I put Tony Kelly? I put him in field. He mightn't even be midfield. He could be a 10. That's the number in his back. Yeah. You know what I mean? You could have Fitzgerald in field with Malone. That's what you could have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fact. It's a fact. I'm looking at the cornerbacks then as well. I was thinking Niall O'Leary potentially, but I think O'Leary will stay where he is. I think because Kelly will be at midfield, whether he starts half forward, he'll be out around midfield. Because I think Clare, what they saw the last day was that, well, when did he come into the game? He came into the game when he actually started going back towards his half-back line and looping back towards his own, towards the, let's say, attacking the goal. Yeah. And when he was running towards goal, that's when he started picking up ball.
Okay.
So I think Clare won't want him flat on the half-forward line. They'll say, right, you're going to start at half-forward, but you're going to come out. And literally, if you're starting at 10, you're running in a U across towards 12, picking up ball and off you go. And the other thing with Tony Kelly is that he's actually really good at tracking back and disrupting play as well, which is, you know, a really essential thing for half forwards in this game as well. And I know we'll talk about him getting going forward and, you know, getting on the scoreboard. That is important. But another man with a great engine that can get back and tackle. So I think they'll start him half forward. I don't think they'll start him midfield. I think it'll be Colin Malone and Fitzgerald. But they'll start him as a third midfielder. They'll start him half forward and off you go back into the midfield.
Skell, if we, or can we assume that Cork go with basically the same inside forward line plan they had against Limerick? And so it'd be a case of, we're going to occupy you, we're going to have Hoggy right up there, we're going to have Connolly there to run in behind, and we're going to let Hayes make his runs probably over on the other side. Are they going to cause serious problems for that Clare full back line? Or were you impressed by what you saw from the Clare full back line against Kilkenny, having had some concerns about them going into the Munster final?
I see. I had concerns after the Munster final, going in and after, because they went 6-on-6 against Limerick. You know, they didn't provide additional cover. And then on the roadshow, we were saying, right, if they're going to be efficient and win the Ireland, they have to provide additional cover. It's essential. You know what I mean? They have to have a seventh back. If you're asking me now, right, say what you like. So they were afforded the opportunity against Kilkenny to have a seventh back unopposed. That's the truth. And what happened is Kilkenny left their spare man at the back, drove a long ball down, and in an awful lot of situations, you had straight line ball to straight line owners and a 2v1. How many times did we see John Connolly coming across? I think his numbers were something like 8 turnovers for the game. Do you know what I mean? But those turnovers, yes, some of them were 1-on-1, but a lot of them were 2-on-1. You know what I mean? So like, I don't think Kilkenny helped themselves in any way, shape or form, you know, to try and penetrate Clare when they had a seventh back. In this instance, I think Cork would be different. I think Clare tried to play with a seventh back. You know, when I say seventh back, he'll fluctuate between third midfielder, seventh back. You know that kind of way he'll move. Whoever that person is will move. But I think it's essential because the Cork forwards are lethal. They have two. There's everything you want in a forward. So if I'm looking for a forward, I'd love to have skill. I'd love to have pace. And I'd love to have size. And some of what the Cork six forwards have is they have all those three things in abundance in different areas. So like you look at the likes of Dalton, he's got, you know, I wouldn't say he's blessed with blistering pace, but he's not slow. Do you know what I mean? Hayes is big, strong, skillful. So is Connolly. Do you know what I mean? Harrandy, we know what he can do. So they're all well-sized, fat, pacey players, right, with energy and huge skill. So they can all cause damage. As a collective, you put the ball anywhere you want in that six forwards, you do damage. That's the truth. You put it anywhere you want. In some teams, you're looking for a corner. I'm looking for an own Cody to do the most damage. I'm looking for a Conor Whelan. That's the truth of it, right? But in this forward line, you're saying, right, any of these guys can do big damage. I don't think Clare or Cork will change tack. As I said earlier on, I'm really intrigued to see how Clare set up that on the long ball, how that's going to happen. Because I can see Hayes and Cleary being the one-to-one, it landing on the big D or the 30-yard line, etc. And what happens from there. So I don't have the answers, but I think that's where a lot of the battle is going to be won. Because Cork have got fruition there. That's where they got an awful lot. And for me, it's where their confidence started, lads. You know what I mean? It started on that long ball, getting goals on Limerick. That's where the whole thing kicked off. You know, it's like nearly they were coming to that game whereby they were under such pressure, they just said, screw it. Pump the fucking thing and let's have at it. Let's go at it. And next thing, it just took off. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And they had their little missteps against Offaly in Dublin. But then they said, fuck it. It worked once, let's do it again. And it worked. If it doesn't, keep at it. So I'm expecting that again, to be honest, you know. But Pat Ryan and his selectors, they're smarter than I am in terms of tactical approach. So they might bring something different. I don't think it's different personnel. I think it's the same six forwards same kind of subs and more of the same, I'd say.
Well, the change they got from their six starting forwards the last day is just insane, by the way. So Brian Hayes 1-4, Patrick Corgan 5 points, albeit three of them from frees. Dalton hit 2 frees, but at 4 points. Seamus Harney 4 points in play. Alan Connolly 3 points in play. Shane Barrett, who's been excellent all year, 3 points in play. And then Darragh Fitzgibbon puts over 3 points from the kind of attacking midfield role as well. Like, that's serious, serious change to get off a forward line, Murph. And that's something that Clare are going to have to respect on Sunday.
It is, yeah. And just like it, they're the old cliche of their time and their run really well. You know, Alan Connolly, and look, it's no slight on the man. He was excellent in the earlier stages for Cork, but he hadn't scored in two games going into the semi-final and then comes out with 3 points. Like, it's a hard thing to do to turn around there now and come out with a serious performance after maybe, you know, there was talk of sickness and different things of that. Nevertheless, came away with 3 points. You know, Hayes, I don't know what he say. It's probably the game of his life so far, which is, it's great to be able to say it. I'm sure there's many more ahead of him. But, like, I mean, that performance alone was, I'm sure, something, regardless what happened Sunday, is something he should be taking pride from. 1-4 in an Ireland semi-final against one of the greatest teams ever. Like, it was just top class. Even look at Patrick Horgan, you know, quiet first half. Hadn't even scored a free, I'm fairly sure, in the first half. I could be wrong. I think he hit one off the post.
He had one that was ruled out for Hawkeye, yep.
Yeah, and then so 5 points in the second half and two from play. You know, so got himself into the game. Harnady, like, the thing I would look at Harnady at the moment, Harnady starts so fast. He's lightning. And he starts so fast, but then when he starts so fast, he kind of burns himself out a small bit. And there's I've seen one or two games where he doesn't really come back into the game, and you see Kingston coming on. But he came back into it in the second half. You know, he ran and ran. Thing you tell players the whole time, you know, go as hard as you can, and if you're fecked, we'll take you off. And next thing, he came back into the game. In the second half, he's so influential. And then, you know, Barrett. Like, for me, Barrett is the catalyst there in that forward line. Again, another fella that's quietly working away there. Probably the fella that has centre forward nailed down on the All-Star team now as well. I've been so impressed by him in terms of he starts the game so well. 3 points, was it 3 points he had as well? 2 or 3 points, Will?
Yeah, and 3 points, yeah.
I think he set up Hayes' goal as well. I think he gave the hand pass off to Hayes. And I think what I remember as well about him was he was, you could see there was no pressure on him when he was playing. I think when he got the goal or when he set up Hayes, but there was definitely one play where he was out on the far sideline underneath the Cusick stand and he got a ball and he turned back and had a look and saw there was nothing on and kind of went, I'm going to take you on here, like the Limerick player. He said, I'm just going to take you on. And when down around him, popped off a pass and there was definitely a score after it. But he just seems to be playing with abandonment at the moment. So, like, you know, all those things that, like, you know, Skell was saying with characteristics, they have so many things going on there and the players are coming right at the right time that for them, they should be so optimistic coming into this final. And they are. They're Cork people. They're optimistic coming into a final. They have to be.
Yeah, I don't know, Skell, if Cork are going to have this, let's say, perfect streak they had just after halftime the last day where they scored 10 from 10. I don't think Clare could be as poor as they were for the first 45 minutes of the first semi-final. So we're probably going to get something in between all this. But let's get down to it. The thing you hate to do, which is the thing that gets clipped, which is who's going to win on Sunday afternoon.
Jesus. See, I hate this crack of this, you know, no matter what we say after the game, someone's going to say, "Are you know nothing?"
I'd agree. You know, the whole, the 52 minutes we've had up until now, take out two or three of them for you slagging each other about and Kilkenny crowds for a minute or two. Everything you've talked about, different matchups, different ideas, what they might change around, all out the window. It's like if Skell predicts that Cork are going to win and Clare win, you're the biggest idiot in the world and vice versa for Murphy if you did the other way around.
Yeah, so, there's two ways I look at this, Will, right? I look at it, right, if both teams play their maximum together is one way. And then I say, right, if both teams played the way that they did in the semi-final, it's another way. So if both teams played the way in the semi-final, Cork win. Right? Over the course of the championship, like, who has been better? You know, yes, Clare beat Cork. But over the course of the championship, you know, it's hard for me to tell. I don't know, because Cork stuttered against Dublin and Offaly. I feel like they just got the job done. And then they were electric against Limerick either side of it.
So they were very poor against Waterford, lest I have to remind you.
Yeah, on day one, yeah. Which I
when people were hot on them, you might think that's irrelevant now, but obviously they've beaten Limerick, and oftentimes when you take the big team out, it doesn't necessarily follow you perform as well the next day.
Absolutely, yeah. I've seen it in my own country. I've seen it in my own country happen before, whereby, like, you take down Kilkenny in the semi-final, let's say, back years previous, and don't back it up at the final. You know, the last time Cork won, Galway were favourites because they beat Kilkenny in the semi-final in 05, didn't back it up. So in this instance, I'm like, geez, maybe. But I'm saying, right, if both teams play to the maximum, I'm going to go with Cork. As well. So I'm saying, right, Cork in semi-final, And if both teams play to absolute maximum, it's Cork. So I'm going to say Cork by narrow margin, by one.
Yeah. Murph, what are you thinking?
Oh, God.
Your mind's going clear by one. Wait and see.
Yeah,
are we going to be aligned here?
Are we going to be in line?
Before you start, right?
Go on.
Do give a great old explanation for why you're not picking one team. So don't go into an explanation as to why you're not picking a team. Just say who's going to win it and label it that. Because you're very good at kind of protecting yourself.
Okay. You know what I mean? Well, I thought what that was just explaining your answer. I thought that's all
No.
You explained your answer as well. Right. I'll explain it without saying anything about the other team that I don't think is going to win. Right. So I'll keep it positive. Right. So I think, again, I'd agree with Skettle in that if both teams play to their potential, I think Cork are the better team. But the one thing I've seen from Clare is that Clare are just emotionally able to rise themselves to these occasions and just put in a performance, regardless if they're not the better team, they put in a performance that wins them the game. Like they're just such a defiant team. It's hard saying that after Cork the last day. But my gut is just telling me there's something about Clare. That's just all it is. And I agree. Like I don't want to be the token kind of, this is such a hard one to call. It genuinely is absolutely disgraceful to try and call this one. It's so tough to play. But if I'm speaking now, I just say my gut is just telling me Clare. And I don't know why. And I don't want to be cheap in saying that. And I don't know why.
Amazing, Mark.
But it's just...
My gut's telling me Cork and your gut's telling me Clare. So just...
I tell you, my head is telling me... I don't know. I genuinely believe that Cork... I think Cork have the bigger performance in them in terms of... But the one thing that's nagging at me is just that Cork have the odd time just fell short through their own downfall, not because the other team was necessarily better. And that's still nagging at me. Like, Jesus, at the start of this championship, I said Cork were going to beat Waterford by 12 points. And Waterford beat them, or was it a draw? I can't even remember.
And lads were
going, how did you think that was going to happen? And then I envisaged this Cork team performing closer to what was against Limerick in the semi-final than, you know, earlier than what they did. So that's the one thing that's nagging at me with Cork is that, yeah, like he said there, you know, you go and you take out the big dog and you stutter then coming into the final. You know, for Clare coming in...
Sorry, Murph, do you think Clare having played in two finals stands them this year?
I think...
Preparation...
Yeah, it's a fair point. Yeah.
Fuck it. You know what I mean? Just little things. Little things.
The band.
That was president, all that shit.
The Mary Waller
person. Cork were in All-Ireland final in 2021. It's not like they don't have recent experience that. As well.
No, the landscape has changed dramatically.
And it's also the thing of getting the silverware in your hand. You know, Cork were in the final in 21, but they didn't win it. But Clare won the league. And this is the one time the league does come into it. There's silverware on display up for grabs. You know, that has to be considered.
Didn't help them in the Munster final this year, though.
It's a fair point. The other thing as well you have to consider, and these may all turn out to be moot points, they mightn't even matter, but like, you know, Clare have the likes of Tony Kelly, who was an All-Ireland medal there, he's Shane O'Donnell, like these lads know what it is to win an All-Ireland final emotionally. Like I remember playing All-Ireland finals and the likes of Henry and these lads talking of what it takes to win a final, lads who had been there. And for players who don't have that, there is something you can cling on to there. To bring to a match, to say, I want to be that person at the other side of the dressing room that has a medal, I want to be that person. So, look, these are so fine margins, but I'm just, I'd say if we did this podcast tomorrow, I'd be saying Cork, but today I'm going to say Clare. And tomorrow I'll say Cork, but today I'll say Clare.
I have the cast and vote. I think Clare are going to win. I think if you run this final 10 times, Clare will win more often than Cork will.
How more often? How much more?
I don't know. We're probably talking about like 6-4, maybe 7-3. I just, again, like Murph said, there's something about Clare. And I know they've come up short when it comes to these games against Limerick particularly. In a way, though, I think this is perfect because I know people, like lots of neutrals early on in the year were like, I would love this to be Clare versus Limerick, where Limerick either go 5 in a row, beat their rivals, win it there, or Clare can potentially be the team that scuppers the 5 in a row. I actually think playing against Limerick may have inhibited Clare. I think Clare will look at this far more where they'll try and go to their own strengths when they play against Cork. And I back Clare to put in a performance. It's not that I'm saying that Cork won't perform or they won't turn up. And I appreciate the Cork's level and times against Limerick. They were absolutely stunning. And when Cork are flying, people know on this podcast that we rate Cork probably higher than most people did. And we get accused all the time of maybe talking Clare down. But generally, with the exception of some defeats in finals, and say the first semi-final against Kilkenny, I think last year Clare responded when they went behind. But I think Clare have got a grit and a determination about them that will see them come out over the line this Sunday. But I'm with you, Skell. I think this is going to be a coin toss either way. No one's hammering anyone this week.
No one's hammering anyone. And well, a point that I thought about as well during the week, and it's just a random point just to throw out there. Like, you go back, it's something people should think about as well when you're calling for the heads of managers. At the start of this round robin this year, people were questioning Brian Lowen and Pat Ryan. Like, these are two lads now who, like, this week people are praising and patting on the back, and aren't they brilliant? But at the start of this round robin, and even after the second game for Cork as well, people are going, not Pat Ryan isn't the man. Now, you know, they're going to erect a statue for him down below in Cork. Like, Brian Lowen, again, after the first round when Limerick bet them, you're thinking, there was people coming out of the woodwork, and you'll always have them. But, like, in fairness, like, to these two boys, they've gotten their teams into some position to be where they are this Sunday. And it's something that maybe won't get mentioned as much as, you know, the general conversations, who's going to win. Like, in fairness to the two boys, you know, if ever there's a testament to give your manager a bit of time and let him do his work, you know, there you are.
Well, no matter what happens this weekend, a famine of relative length is going to come to an end. It's a while since these teams have won. And it's going to be an All-Ireland winning player and manager by the end of it as well, no matter what happens on either side. And it's going to be the same in the football in a couple of weeks' time when Armagh play against Galway as well. So we'll ask Gell what he thinks about the Galway footballers on the members' pod. The guys are also going to do their combined Clare and Cork 15. I set no parameters for that, so there was one piece of homework that they got earlier today to put them together. Just the one last mention I want to do before we finish up on the mother pod for this week, which is last chance, if you want to come to our hurling final preview this Friday, where there are a pair of All-Ireland final tickets available as part of our competition at the end of the night as well. We've got signed Clare jerseys, signed Cork jerseys, all that type of jazz. We've got Anthony Nash, we've got Podge Collins, got Tommy Walsh, we've got Paul Murphy over there. We've James Scale on a FaceTime call at some point from a wedding. It's going to be a great night. Borgosh Energy Theatre. Tickets are available. No pressure, Scale, not to be make absolutely sure hammered by the time we're in you. Yeah, probably around 7, 8 o'clock, Scale will be getting the call. If you want to pick up your tickets, and we're on that last week now, offtheball.com/events, or if you go to, I presume, any of our social medias, you'll probably see posts about it as well. Tickets are €20 all in. So you'll see they're €18.49, including all of the costs, goes to €20. All that money is going to Focus Ireland, who are the charity partner this year of Borgosh Energy. So it's going to a great cause as well. It's going to be a fantastic night, two nights out from the All-Ireland final. And we look forward to seeing any of you that come along this Friday as well. Lads, it's been a pleasure. Cork supporter James Gell, thanks a million.
Oh, do you know what now? I give you a bad chip and a horse there a while ago, right? Seeing as both of you won for Clare, we'll have 25 each. How's that?
No bother at all, yeah. Yeah.
I'm happy enough to chase the losses on that horse in Newcastle by losing another 25 quid by being so sure about Clare. Fellow Clare tipper, Paul Murphy, thanks a million.
Sound lads.
Has been the Hurling Pod with thanks to Borgosh Energy. They're the proud sponsors of the All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Borgosh Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.